And I invite you to join me in chapter 9 of John this morning as we continue this series and understanding of who will you crown king of your life. Now, I was thinking about it, and that's a dangerous thing sometimes, I realize. But every generation has that event that we all can call "where were you when" kind of events. Now, granted, within the history, just in the short span of history that's just represented in this room, there are a lot of these events. Many of you, I mean, there's some still that can remember Pearl Harbor. There are some that can remember the moon landing. And where were you when that happened? JFK, Martin Luther King Jr., 9/11. And we have these things that are embedded within us and they don't have to be necessarily traumatic events. There are happy times as well. I admit that. But in this midst of this, in John chapter 9, we encounter for this area, this time, and these people, one of these "where were you" kind of events. From John chapter 7 onward, Jesus has been moving and he's riled up the Jewish leaders and he's getting more intentional in his ministry and in what he's doing and how he's encountering people. And it says that even to the point of chapter 8, that Jesus is barely escaping being stoned by the Pharisees. And they're kind of divided. Some of them are ready to call him the devil. There are some that are starting to believe that he is sent from God. But these are statements, I mean, he's made these statements that are causing a lot of dysfunction in their world because they had a set pattern of what they understood to be true. He's called himself the living water in chapter 4. He's called himself the light of the world. He's called himself the bread of life. And there's a lot of discussion of what that means. So in John chapter 9, as it happens so often in John, Jesus is comes along a person whose story provides an opportunity to teach. In this case, they're walking through Jerusalem. He knows his life is in danger. And they're walking amidst the pool, near the pool of Siloam, which is a purification pool that is used in the Feast of the Tabernacles. And so they encounter a man who is sitting there begging. And in verse 19, you learn that he is born blind. But at this point, they don't know. We don't have that part. And as far as we know, in this midst of the story, we do not know that this man began the conversation. He didn't engage Jesus and the disciples. He doesn't begin that. But as the disciples see him, they ask Jesus a question. They are intrigued by this man's condition and wonder why this man is blind. They said, was it his sin that he did something, or was it his parents' sin that was the cause? Understand, by asking that question, they are not holding a whole lot of sympathy for this man. They're just interested in what caused it. That his condition is just merely there. They want to understand the diagnosis. But Jesus, in his reply, rejects the premise of their discussion and their question. He is interested in the man himself. And one of the things I've learned is that how we punctuate verse 3 makes all the difference in the world in this passage. Some translations add, to help understand the context of this man, early in this passage, they add at the very end of verse 3 that he was born blind. But the way they do it, it suggests that the man's blindness was always there so that God could do this work and show his power, that it was the excuse. So this man's life of begging, this man's life of isolation, this man's life of being an outcast was just there as a tool. A more accurate translation would be putting a period, not a comma, so that it would say this: neither this man nor his parents sinned. Period. But in order that God's work might be revealed in him, it is necessary for us to work the works of the one who sent me. It's not that the man was blind for this moment, but that in the midst of this moment, God can do a work in him, through them, in order to be revealed in this man's life. There's a difference. So we look at what happens. Jesus doesn't just merely speak healing. He doesn't just touch him and say, "Be healed." And I think we all recognize that he could do both. Instead, in verse 6, it says that he spit on the ground and made some mud. It's quite a visual image for us. And he took that mud and he puts it on the blind man's eyes and tells him to go wash it off in the pool of Siloam. The man at this point has a choice. We don't know if he's heard of Jesus. We can assume he probably did. We don't know if he, at this point, we haven't been told that he's talked to Jesus at all. Unlike other occasions where Jesus says, "What is it that you want?" That question is never asked. But he has a choice. I can either do what this man says, or I can sit here and gripe because someone wiped something on my face. He heads to the pool and washes. And for the first time in his life, he sees. He sees color. He sees images. The world is opened up to him beyond what he can hear, smell, and touch. He is whole. Completely healed. It's not that his sight was restored. He was given sight. This was an unheard of miracle. For many, this is a miracle greater than raising someone from the dead. They've heard stories of that. It's been said and reported that prophets like Elisha and Elijah had brought people back from the dead. But no one has given sight to someone that was born blind. The story is full of lots of things in different ways. I mean, it's quite a story of a lot of back and forth and people engaging this man and this man's parents and then this man. And then Jesus finally talks with him again. And there's a lot of truths that are worth being shared. The story of Jesus' healing power and what he's able to do. There's talk about the revelation that he is the light of the world. There's a witness of this man's faith, his obedience, and his trust in what Christ has done. And yet I also look into these stories and I try to put myself in his place and I think about what it had to have been like to see for the first time. Something we take for granted. I think about what it must have been like when he heard Jesus reveal to him that he was the Son of Man. I wonder what it was like for him at this point to worship Jesus. Because he's not just going to a service. This is a man that in the midst of this moment, he is fully engrossed that he can see, that he can hear, that he can make his way around, and that he is being engaged by Jesus. And I also, me being me, want to know more about the mud. As I studied this week, pouring over various commentaries, and I admit that that last one kept coming back to me a little bit. We're used to talking about slinging mud, but in this morning, I want us to look at the mixture of soil and spit. Really churchy kind of things to talk about, isn't it? But the thing is, it was used by Jesus to bring healing and wholeness. More specifically, how can we be mud in God's hands? That we might be used to bring healing and wholeness to the lives that surround us. And going back into verse 3, that in order that God's works might be revealed, that we would be used. So this morning, let's see what lessons the Lord may want to teach us about mud. M-U-D. First of all, M reminds us that we've all been made by God. In the way that mud is made of dirt, so humanity too was finished. I mean, was fashioned out of the soil of the earth. All of us are God's dirt. We're all dirty. Genesis 2, verse 7 reveals that God took some of the dirt of the earth that he had created, that he had spoke into being. And he fashioned the first human being and he breathed life into him. And he named him Adam. Now, the word Adam in Hebrew, and I'm probably mispronouncing it because I'm American that way. But it means to be red. It refers to the very clay that God used to fashion mankind. So every time Adam heard or used his name, it was a reminder that he was from the earth. That he was God's personal creation. Later on, God refined some of that Adam dirt, and Eve was brought forth. From that time on, those two first human beings, made of simple dirt and spirit, were given the ability to create, to think, to live a life pleasing to God, They were given the task to go forth and multiply and be fruitful and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And yet that wasn't good enough. They took it into their own hands, and as a result of mankind's sin, Scripture tells us that one day, as a result of that, even our physical bodies must return to the earth. From dust to dust. From dust we came, and dust we will return. Secondly, you reminds us that miracles happen when we're united with Jesus. Something remarkable happens when dirt, the ordinary thing, and water unite. In this case, the ordinary dirt is transformed into a whole new substance, mud. And you think of that day, people saw Jesus just spit on the ground. And you had to maybe what they were wondering, you know, this is nothing special, but it's kind of gross. Nothing special, and yet what they witnessed was the living water of God mixing with the dirt of creation to form a new way to bring wholeness and life to this man. I mean, we can wonder, well, why, like I said, why didn't he just touch him? Or why didn't he just say, you know, your eyes be awakened? Why did he choose this method to heal him? And there are a lot of different theories. Some scholars say that Jesus used this method because at the time there were people who believed that the spit of a firstborn son could contain healing qualities. Cole, that's a challenge for you. Others point out that using spit was a common medical practice used by some physicians who believed that human spittle contained healing qualities. So they would place their spittle on the patient's wounds. Dr. Allenko, you have a new method just before retirement. Still others would point out that there are ancient stories of holy men who would spit on the eyes of those who had sight issues, and they would be cured. Well, we don't know why Jesus used this method, but all we know is that he did. But we also know something, that the dirt by itself isn't going to do much. It's when it's combined with the living water that God has provided that it becomes usable holy mud in the hands of Jesus. It allows itself to be turned into something more than just dirt, more than just mud. It becomes a substance that brought light and life to this man. And I really think that's the message that we need to hear this morning. Maybe that more so that we need to receive this morning. Because back in Genesis, we see how God takes the dirt and fashions Adam. Now in the hands of Jesus, this dirt has been transformed into something that is able to bring healing and wholeness to someone who had never experienced sight before. Simple dirt, united with the living water of Jesus, becomes sanctified and brings light to those trapped in darkness. Remember in John 4, as Jesus is talking to the woman at the well, he tells the woman, everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water that I will give him will become a spring of everlasting life. What Jesus did that day can happen in each of our lives. That when our lives, the dirt that we are combined with the living water and the truth of the Spirit, our lives can be transformed into molded into something much more powerful than just by themselves. That we can become holy and sanctified mud in the hands of the Creator. Holy mud that then Jesus can use to bring healing and wholeness to the lives of people around us that are caught in the dark. All of this leads to my final thought, D, that the Lord designs us to partner with Him. But here's really the soul-searching question for us this morning. Will I allow God to use me to bring healing and salvation to our world? Not the kind of salvation that Jesus has already accomplished, but the understand that our people are lost and they are going to die without the knowledge of Christ and what He's already done, without that belief. Now, most of us would immediately, at least in this room, would declare, well, yeah, why wouldn't I allow that? Why wouldn't I? And then I go back to this passage and it hits me. Look at what happens to the mud. It gets washed off. This man doesn't take it, you know, doesn't take it and revere it as something this, woo! He doesn't put it in a vessel and store it where everybody can look at it and raise their hands when they come by it. He washes it off. It was simply just part of the story. He simply obeyed Jesus and went and washed it off. It was gone. It was simply something that Jesus used to bring healing to another person. And maybe that's what the Holy Spirit is asking me and us this morning. Because I admit, I like it when people say, hey, there's that guy. At least in some contexts. We like to be patted on the back. And God's saying, it's not about you. It's about me. I'm the one that takes the ordinary and transforms it in with my holiness. Am I willing to totally commit and surrender my life into the hands of Jesus that I might be used in His hands to bring salvation and healing to others without receiving recognition? Would I allow Jesus to use me in a way that He felt necessary so that God's work can be done, that God's work can be revealed to those that are around me? Are you willing to be mud in the hands of Jesus? Are you willing to be used in any way that He chooses? The reason I ask this is because He desires each of us to surrender our lives so that others may find everlasting light and life. He wants each of us to pray this simple prayer, take my life, my dirt, and use it for Your glory and Your kingdom. Take my life, take my dirt, and use it for Your glory, not mine. Your kingdom, not mine. You see, it's one thing to be God's dirt. By nature, all of us are that. For dirt you came from, and dirt you will return. And we all know the joy of being united with Jesus. If you've said, I believe, God, I believe in what You've done through Your Son. I confess my sins, and I ask for Your forgiveness. We have been united, and we will be united for eternity, as long as we live into that. but to be transformed by Christ and to be used. That's something that in our free will we have to choose. It's one thing to say, I believe. Like I said last week, it's a whole nother thing to say, you are Lord and King of my life, and I will fully surrender. Because we have a choice there. We are all invited to partner with God. But to do so means we have to surrender our own desires in order to allow God to use us in whatever he needs. Jesus tells us in John 15, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. This morning, our Lord calls us all to be his mud, to all to respond. This story in John 9 is more than just a healing story. It's a story of love and invitation. It's a story that invites all of us to participate in order that God's glory would be revealed. This morning, will you give your life to Christ to be used? Will you surrender all that you have and place your life in his hands? Will you submit to be conformed to his will and his way? And it's not just something that's going to happen automatically. It's a daily decision. It's a moment-by-moment decision where we die to ourselves and say, God, use me. Your will, your way. It made me think of an old song, and I'm going to ask Lenny to come on up. Couldn't get it out of my head. Because one of the lines in it is, thou art the potter, I am the clay. Mold me and make me after thy will. While I am waiting, yielded and still. And as a moment of commitment this morning, I'm going to ask if I want you to listen to those words. And if you're in agreement, sing them boldly.